The Brad Cessnat Show, broadcasting live.
Hello and welcome everybody into another edition of the Brad Cessnat Show here on Sports 360 AZ. I am obviously not Brad Cessnat, much shorter, a little bit more hair. I am actually Greg Esposito. They call me Espo. I am filling in for Brad today. He was kind enough to ask me to do the show, and I'm excited to be here. I'm the host of the Solar Panel. It's a Phoenix Suns podcast, and I've been around Valley Media for years, and anytime the big guy asks me to sit in the seat, it is truly special. But it's extra special when it comes on the heels of Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. Phoenix Suns there for the first time in 11 years, their first trip back to the postseason in 11 years, and this run has been particularly special so far. I don't know if you feel it. I don't know if you, the viewer, have sensed that something special is going on here with this group of Phoenix Suns players and this front office and coaching staff for that matter, but I feel it. Having worked for the organization for 5 years, been around the lows, been around teams that were dysfunctional, and that's being kind in calling them that. They were beyond the family who can't stop arguing at holidays, right? They were next level dysfunctional, players saying they don't want to be here. Guys fighting the coach and yelling at him on the bench, all sorts of craziness. This team is a group that has something special. I ask people within the organization because, outside you see things on TV, you see things when you're at a game in person, and you kind of get a sense for it. But the true test is when you ask somebody that's in the building, is this a special group? Is something interesting going on here with these guys? Is this more than just a team that is winning? Is this next level good, right? And I reached out to a few people I still know over there, and I got, yes, this is special. These guys truly care for each other. These guys have a chemistry that is rarely seen. And that was on display after Game 1. And we'll get into the specifics about the game, but this moment struck me as quite interesting. Suns win, and they're going off the court after Devin Booker finishes his interview with Rachel Nichols on ABC. And the cameras catch him and DeAndre Ayton coming down the tunnel with a phone. And they're both staring at it, laughing and talking, right? Well, it turns out that phone had Chris Paul on FaceTime. Chris Paul, who had to miss Game 1 because of health and safety protocol due to the coronavirus. He's sitting there. And the first thing that these guys wanted to do, they don't want to get in the locker room and celebrate. They don't, they want to talk to Chris Paul, their teammate, about the game. They want to celebrate with Chris Paul, who is not there, on a phone. That's something different. That's not a team that just kind of gets along. That's not a team that sort of has chemistry. That's a team that really loves each other, is playing for each other, is playing for the name on the front of the jersey and not the back of the jersey. And that's why I think this is the first time, one of the reasons, in Phoenix that we've seen a team that's capable of actually going all the way. Now, I'm not saying they will. There's a lot in front of them. They still need 3 more wins against the Clippers, and whoever comes out of the East, whether it's Atlanta or Milwaukee, will put up one heck of a challenge for these Suns. But this is the clearest path I think they've ever had to a potential title. This is next level in terms of the way this team functions as a group, as a team, making the next pass, doing the right thing, the next man up, the depth, the defense. This is the most complete team we've ever seen in Phoenix. And that's why I think we're looking at something maybe we've never experienced before in this town, at least from a basketball perspective. Sure, we have the 2001 Diamondbacks who won the title, but that was big name talent. that was superstars. And yes, the Suns have big names or a big name in Chris Paul, but it's not as if they were the juggernaut. They weren't the super team. That was the Nets. That was the Lakers. That's the Clippers team that they're facing. Those are super teams. This is just a genuine, old-fashioned, real team. Now let's talk about game one. Suns pull out a victory, 120-114 over the Clippers. The end got a little closer than the Suns would have liked, but that fourth quarter, halfway through the third and the fourth quarter, the Suns really showed who we've seen them as throughout this eight-game winning streak in the playoffs. The Suns have won eight straight games in the playoffs, just like their bubble run a year ago. They've won eight straight, the longest winning streak in Suns playoff history. And yeah, I know it's been a drought over the last decade, but that is a very deep and rich history when you go back and look at it throughout this 53 years of this franchise. Lots of playoff appearances, lots of wins in the playoffs, but this team is already in the record books for the longest streak that any Suns team in the playoffs has done. And that's unbelievable. And there's one man who came through in a big way on Sunday afternoon, Devin Armani Booker, right? We always knew once this guy got on the big stage that he was going to have the opportunity to do something truly special. We said he's built for the playoffs. Well, some of us did. There's plenty of people that we have the receipts that said not so nice things and did not believe in this kid. But those of us who did, those of us that have been there since the beginning, saw it firsthand, knew that this kid had the makings of a true superstar, said he is built for the playoffs. His mentality, his game is built for the playoffs. And he showed it in game one in ways that, you know, we've seen it throughout the playoffs, but this was the most complete, I think, fantastic performance that we've seen out of Devin Booker. First career triple-double in his career, not just playoffs. We're not just talking since he's gotten in the playoffs. His entire career, he looked across the floor or in the backcourt and went, I don't have CP3. I'm going to have to be the one to take over, but I'm going to have to do it in a way that gets my teammates involved as well. And he was unselfish. He was spectacular in the way he did it. He became the first, or just the eighth player to record a triple-double in the Western Conference Finals, right? The other seven guys, Magic Johnson, Charles Barkley, Tim Duncan, Russell Westbrook, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, LeBron James. That's quite a corner to own some property in when it comes to the NBA playoffs. You know, you look at that and those are MVPs. Those are champions. Those are all-time greats on that list. And Devin Booker inserted himself into that conversation on Sunday with his great performance against the Clippers. I like to refer to it as Armani mode, right? In that third quarter, all of a sudden, he went, time to take over. Flips the switch. Becomes the monster of the mid-range. Hits those shots that looked like a combination of what Chris Paul's been doing, what he watched Kobe do throughout his career, killer mid-range jumpers, few threes mixed in, up over guys, didn't care who was guarding him, just decided to lock in and take over. But to me, the assists were impressive. He came through and found his teammates. He knew CP3's not there. I need to distribute. When Campaign got in foul trouble, he said, all right, time to activate Point Book. And yet yesterday, Sunday, was a culmination of these things that he learned throughout his career. These lessons that he learned throughout years of poor play from his team, bad teammates, worse coaches, an organization in dysfunction. Devin Booker still sat there and he learned. Instead of whining, oh, poor me, get me out of Phoenix, find me a better team, he said, I'm going to make myself better. I'm going to learn how to be the guy that steps up in the moment when it's necessary. I'm going to learn how to be the distributor. I'm going to learn how to be the leader this team needs. I'm going to live up to those words that Kobe Bryant wrote on a shoe for me when I was a rookie. I will be legendary. And he has been on a one-track mind to figure out how to do that. And what we in Phoenix have seen it, Sunday he emerged on the national stage. That was the true first moment where people went, wow, this kid is good. You've got Stephen A. Smith screaming this morning that he's the next Kobe Bryant. Well, Magic Johnson's on his show, shaking his head, yes. I don't think that's fair to Devin Booker. I think he certainly has elements of Kobe's game. He studied him the way Kobe studied MJ, but he's the next evolution when you look at it. Because Devin Booker gets his teammates involved. Devin Booker does those little things. Devin Booker isn't going to not take a shot in a fourth quarter because he doesn't think his teammates are good enough. That's what 5 years of struggling taught him. Instead of being handed a silver spoon with Shaquille O'Neal and a Lakers franchise that could get anything they wanted, Devin Booker's struggles have taught him how to be the next evolution of a guy like that. The unselfish version, the guy that can go out there and can do something special. And Devin Booker's got a tall order. He's trying to bring a championship to a Valley who has been thirsting for one since 1968. And for the first time ever, there's a path, a true path. There's no behemoth standing in their way. There's no Michael Jordan waiting at the end of it. There's no Red Auerbach, amazing Celtics team standing at the end of the path. It's the Phoenix Suns playing within themselves that's the biggest roadblock to them potentially winning a title. And Devin Booker has unlocked something special within himself, and this team's unlocked something special within themselves, and the organization has unlocked something special here in Phoenix. And you can feel it when you're out there. Wear Suns gear. People are going to start talking to you in ways that they haven't in decades. Something special is going on here in Phoenix, and we've got a front row seat for it. Coming up next here on the Brad Sesmatt Show is a friend of mine, Lee Ellis. He's of the Athletics No Dunk podcast, one of the best national minds when it comes to basketball. We'll talk Suns. We'll talk about what's going on in the Eastern Conference, and we'll get his opinion on how Devin Booker's doing. It's the Brad Sesmatt Show here on Sports 360 AZ. Hello and welcome everybody back into the Brad Sesmatt Show here on Sports 360 AZ. I'm your host, your fill-in host, Greg Esposito, Espo as they call me, and I've got a very special guest on the program, a man who I trust his basketball opinion more than most anybody that you can listen to or watch. His name is Lee Ellis. He is one of the co-hosts of the No Dunk podcast on The Athletic. Lee, thank you for taking a few minutes with me today.
You're welcome, Espo. I wish all the Phoenix Suns fans felt that way about me because I've had a few coming at me this season for different reasons, but it's all fun. It's great to have the Suns back in this position where things are looking great. They're always a fun team to cheer for, and that arena, man, it looks like it's a fun place to be right now.
Look, don't take it personal. After 11 years not making the playoffs, there's a surprising amount of angst with Suns fans and even between Suns fans. So don't take any of that personal. But from a national perspective, you obviously are looking at the NBA in totality, night in, night out, and you have for years. When you look at this Suns team, in particular, this playoff run so far, how impressed have you been with this group and how surprised have you been with what they've been able to do?
It's been an incredible season, to be honest. I mean, let's go back to the start there. When they made the trade for Chris Paul, that to me was a sort of home run swing. We've got to make the playoffs to keep Devin Booker happy. That's what it felt like. And Chris Paul, a legend of the game, what he did in OKC last season, getting them to game 7 against the Rockets down there in the bubble. It was like, this guy can still perform. He can still deliver, but he's a 35-year-old. You know, you don't necessarily build with guys like that. It's more sort of like a desperation move. But it's turned out to be so much more than that because you know, his leadership and his guidance is really reflected. And you can see that in the way that Devin Booker plays now. You can see the way he works with DeAndre Ayton because, you know, Chris Paul throughout his career hasn't always gotten along with his own teammates as well. You only have to look at another DeAndre Jordan there in LA when Chris Paul was there. You know, he got a lot out of him, but they didn't always see eye to eye. I think Chris Paul's learned from that and he's understanding now how to manage some of these personalities of players that he plays with. But I just think he's had such an impact on this team. And now it's filtering through to all the players on both ends of the floor because Chris Paul's always been a great defender. And offensively, it always felt like he could have scored a lot more throughout his career, but he's much more invested in trying to, you know, be the facilitator as well and get other guys' shots and put them in the right positions to succeed. So, you know, when the season started, it was like, oh, this is a good story. The Suns are doing better than expected. And as the season went on, they continued to just get better at both ends of the floor. But not only that, play fun basketball as well. It's like, wow, watching these guys just get up and down every night is incredibly fun. And then when it comes to the playoffs, it was like, okay, the worst matchup, I think, for the Suns was the Lakers in that first round, simply because the Suns, you know, having home court advantage, but you're going up against LeBron James. And I know from being a Raptors fan and also a Raptors fan, also living here in Atlanta, come playoff time, LeBron just sort of picks and chooses when he decides to take over series. And I really thought the experience factor was going to be too much for the Suns. And I think, you know, what happened in game one, for example, Suns win, a very impressive performance, but LeBron has lost so many times in his career of that game one of the series. And then he's gone on to either sweep it or win it in six games. It was like, this is what he's going to do. And we saw that in game two and three. Now, injuries have played a factor as well. Obviously, Anthony Davis isn't 100%, but Chris Paul wasn't 100% either. And so the Suns still had to figure out a way to win and they got it done. And I think, again, you're seeing that as good as Chris Paul and Devin Booker and Ayton have been, they're getting contributions from important guys, you know, like in Mikal Bridges. Cam Johnson's been good as well. You know, Saric is coming off the bench and giving decent minutes at times. I mean, you're not going to be relying on these guys to play 35 minutes, but then they come out, it's not like it just completely falls apart. So, you know, and then the series against the Nuggets, fantastic. Again, I don't know many people who saw a sweep coming there. I know one guy in Denver did, of course. We all know about that that situation there. But again, and the Nuggets, you know, again, also shorthanded. But a good team, a legit contender in my mind, is a team that really drills home its advantage. And that's what the Suns did against the Nuggets. They didn't ever let up. I mean, you go back to game one of that series, and up until about halfway through the third quarter, the Nuggets were, I think, in control of that game. And then it was sort of a Chris Paul takeover. So, you know, experience is huge in the playoffs. And we're seeing the Suns outside of their young franchise keys in Ayton and Booker. Jay Crowder and Chris Paul are really the only guys who have had significant playoff minutes. And they're using that experience to help sort of guide and steer the team through while still letting Devin Booker be himself and sort of explore the playoffs for the first times. Because, look, it's a funny thing, experience as well, because if you look at like the Sixers last night, playoff experience, I think, actually haunted them in a way that they fell over again. They should have won this series and they weren't able to do that. They should have won, you know, against the Raptors a few years ago and they weren't able to do that. So sometimes inexperience, that, you know, you don't know what you don't know, also plays a factor. The Suns are playing without any demons. You know, they haven't been to the playoffs obviously for such a long time. So they're not playing with like, oh man, you know, we get to this spot and things fall apart. Instead, they're playing with a fluency and a freedom and a trust and a confidence in each other. And I think that's really, really been probably the most impressive part, is that they haven't hit that part where you're like, oh, yep, see, inexperienced, not enough team, not enough depth. Instead, it's the opposite. The longer the playoffs have gone, the better they've gotten.
You bring up Devin Booker, right? And I won't ask you to go back in time and tell me your overall opinion back. But Devin Booker has had a lot of people who have not believed in him over the years, guys that would say he's a high-volume scorer on a bad team. Looking at his evolution, in particular, the game on Sunday, is Devin Booker, in your mind, a superstar now? Has he come onto the stage and earned that in this playoffs, or does he still have work to do?
Well, I think he still has work to do as far as these playoffs. I mean, you look, the Suns are in a great spot right now, and if he continues on this sort of trajectory, then there's no question about it. But they still have to close out the Clippers. They have to make the finals, and then let's see. And again, if he makes the finals, I don't think either way you say, well, he's a superstar or he's not. We have to see that performance. But he's certainly showing that all those years of hurt have really brought him to this moment where he's like, I know the other side. I've been to the other side where it's like, you know, you win 25 games and no one's talking about you. And people are saying that. It's like, well, Devin Booker, he's got a beautiful shot. But what does it matter if the Suns are out of the playoffs a month into the season? So I think you're sort of seeing a guy who last night, especially against the Clippers, in that third and fourth quarter, superstar time. What did he do? He hit the shots, but he also got his teammates involved and he made those right passes. He rebounded the ball, you know, so it wasn't like he's just all downhill giving me the ball and I'm going to try to get hot from 3-point range. He was hitting those mid ranges. And one part of his game, and I saw this again from Chris Paul in OKC, like from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, that sort of zigzag move across the front of the key there, the top of the key to sort of pull up while the defender's not sure. Do you drop back on him or do you come up and risk him going past you for a layup? That is what now has become, you know, like a money shot. Like I know exactly I can get a basket. I can get a look off if I go to that move. And that to me is an evolution of his game because, again, the mid-range right now is still uncool in the NBA. Everyone's like, it's either three-pointer or a layup. But Chris Paul has stayed true to his game while it's like the mid-ranger is just cash. That's where he just goes and eats. And I think that's also giving trust and confidence to some of those young guys. Like, don't fall in love with a three all the time. Okay, go and get those other high percentage looks because even though analytically they may be uncool right now, there's still a two is better than a zero. And that's what you're seeing. So, you know, I think it's look, he's been a two-time All-Star Devin Booker, but both times he's been an injury replacement. So I think in some ways he still doesn't have the national respect that he probably deserves. But from what we're seeing in the playoffs, that's now, you know, that's becoming less and less of a problem because he is still the star on the team. But if you look at like All-NBA voting, for example, he didn't get a whole lot of recognition. And I think, you know, he and Chris Paul, I think, finished fifth in MVP voting, I believe. And so he still got the attention. Maybe it's that sort of, you know, that veteran presence that Chris Paul has, whereas Devin Booker, I think he had less votes than Russell Westbrook, if I remember correctly, which you can argue who had a better season. Westbrook certainly finished strong with all those triple doubles. But throughout the course of the season, I think Devin Booker was a better player. But it takes time sometimes to sort of get that recognition that you deserve. And those early seasons, you know, he had a beautiful shot, like we were saying earlier, but it just didn't really translate to a lot of success. And now it's like he goes out and puts up a 40-point triple-double, you know, yesterday. Well, you're not going to be hiding under the radar for too much longer if he keeps performing like that. Because, as I say, no Chris Paul yesterday. And it's like, okay, the focus of the Clippers defense clearly has to be on Devin Booker. It's, you know, a bit of a slowish start, but that second half, I mean, that third quarter, I talked about it on our show today. The second half of that third quarter, Paul George and Devin Booker, big shot after big shot. That's the sort of stuff that really does stick out and people remember it because it's in the playoffs. And it's like, the Clippers, sure, maybe they're coming off a long series against the Jazz, didn't have a lot of time to prepare, but no one feels sorry for anybody. You've got to go out there and perform. And the Suns were ready. Monty Williams did a great job having everybody ready and prepared because he knew the Clippers weren't going to just lie down.
Yeah, that third quarter felt like a heavyweight fight between Paul George and Devin Booker. It was just back and forth, big shot after big shot. And I think this series is going to come down to, in my mind, DeAndre Ayton's ability offensively and then team defense for this Suns team. You can pencil Devin Booker, not for a 40-point triple-double, obviously, but you can pencil him in for being a factor offensively, but team defense, and I think DeAndre Ayton are going to be huge the rest of the way in the series.
Yeah, and I think with Ty Lue, he dusted off DeMarcus Cousins yesterday and Zubats. He's trying to get whatever he can out of those guys. Now, I think on the offensive end, you know, we know DeMarcus, he can hit the three. You know, he's a bully still. He's a handful. Zubats, you know, he gives it his best as well. But they certainly are overmatched against Ayton because Ayton's growth and development, you know, again, has really stood out in the playoffs at both ends of the floor. You know, in his early career, not a great defender and not a great awareness of where to be, how to be in a pick and roll, you know, how to even just to box out. But a couple of years experience, and again, I think being alongside Chris Paul and seeing what is needed of him, he's picked that up a lot. But, you know, when Šarić was on the court yesterday, the Clippers made some moves. When Ayton came back out, it was almost like, right, we're sealing that that advantage perhaps that the Clippers had, because he was just so good at both ends. And they're going to need that from him for the rest of the series as well, because if you have a dominant big man who can finish around the rim and who can deter shots and grab rebounds at the other end, it just means that you can get out in transition if you're the Suns. You can get out and get those fast breaks and get those opportunities. And then if things in the half court are not moving, you can maybe run a pick and roll with him and get him going to the hoop. So, you know, that is just so huge for them that they get important minutes from him. And when, you know, whoever it is who comes off the bench, it was Šarić yesterday, you know, that the Suns don't fall apart. But also I think Monty Williams is like, we're not going to ride this for too long. You know, Ayton's a young guy. There's no reason why, you know, they haven't had, you know, the grind series yet, the Suns, where it's like, okay, you know, well, I guess I went six games against the Lakers there, but it was a sweep against the Nuggets. So he should be fresh. He should be young. You know, you don't need to preserve minutes for a guy like that. Get him out there and play and dominate when he can. And the Clippers understand that, like, listen, we can't really score against him when he's out on the court. And we also have to try to prevent what he can do on the other end. But when it is, you know, Šarić out there, it at least gives them a bit more of a chance, and they have to take full advantage of that if you're the Clippers. But, you know, as long as Ayton stays out of foul trouble and he stays on the court, then that is a huge advantage point that the Suns have in this series.
Suns fans have taken a spotlight for good and bad throughout this playoffs. But from your perspective, you know, how impactful have these fans been on these playoffs so far? It seems like the national media is taking note of them.
Like watching those games, it feels like I'm watching a soccer game where, like, every basket they pan to the crowd and there's kids ripping their shirts off. There's people dancing and celebrating like they're winning a championship. And look, I think, you know, for the last decade, really, when after sort of the Steve Nash era, they didn't have a lot to cheer about and a lot to celebrate. You know, there were a lot of bad seasons in there, a lot of coaching changes, a lot of question marks about the direction of the team. But now that they're winning and playing such fun basketball, it's like, man, I'd love to be in Phoenix for one of those games, because it just seems like a party every single night. And that is great. And you know, this is what we've missed, I think, over the last 12 months when we've been, for the most part, without any fans in the arena. It's like, basketball's great, we can watch it, but it misses that element where it's like, and I've been to a couple of playoff games down here in Atlanta, where the team just gets on a roll and you can just feel that your energy and your input there helps that next ball go in, you know, creates that opportunity, gets that tip in or that put back dunk. And it's just such an important part of our game. And so for the Suns, who haven't been a part of that really in the playoffs for so long, I think everyone's really enjoying this moment. And, you know, I know we were talking off air beforehand, like when I first started watching the game, the NBA, and the Suns had, you know, the Jeff Hornacek, Dan Majerle, Kevin Johnson era, and those crowds there, it felt like they were on top of the players there, you know, in the old Coliseum, where it was just like now, I mean, the fans are close to the players now, but back then it felt like almost, you know, you were encroaching onto the court, and that provided an incredible environment to play in. And, you know, so for me, it sort of brings back memories of that, of just watching Ty Corbin out there throwing down dunks for the Phoenix Suns, you know, Mark West as well. Like he was a sort of undersized big man, but I think he, you know, he sort of encompassed all about that Phoenix sort of tough guy, you know, work hard mentality. And, you know, so it's great now to see a team as well that is fun to watch. You know, this is not a sort of a grinded out team that's going to go out there and just sort of, you know, slowly, methodically defeat their opponent. It's fun basketball. There's lots of three-pointers, lots of ball movement. That ball just zips around the perimeter to get everybody involved. And that's what makes basketball so much fun, is when it's like, man, look at how much fun these guys are having with each other. They trust each other, have confidence. And then ultimately they're winning as well. So, I hope I can get out there to a game, probably not this season, unfortunately, but the way things are going, I think we're going to see the Suns in the playoffs anyway for years to come.
Yeah, it does very much. There was a reason they used to call that building the Madhouse on McDowell. And I think we're definitely seeing that emerge again here for Suns fans. Real quick before we let you go, Lee, looking at the Eastern Conference, you've got Bucks, you've got the Hawks, an unexpected matchup there. What are your thoughts on the East and looking at it in totality? Is this the Suns' run to lose? Is it basically come down to if they can play their game, they may have a really good shot?
Well, I guess the Suns will have home court advantage for the remainder of the playoffs because they certainly had the second best record in the West, and I think they had a better record than the Bucks, who now, they will have home court against the Hawks. So that certainly is an advantage here for Phoenix. And the great thing is, right now, I think each four team has a strong case if things sort of tilt their way. I think Kawhi Leonard's obviously the biggest deciding factor for the Clippers. I think if he comes back and he's healthy, then that series is alive. If he doesn't, then I think the Suns win, whether it's just a matter of whether it's 5-6 or even 7 games. But I think the Suns are favored in that one. And Milwaukee, Atlanta, I mean, Atlanta have won 2 road series. They weren't down against the Knicks, but they were down against the Sixers here, down 2-1, got to a 3-2 lead, tied it up, and then win on the road. So they've been super impressive. But they've also got some injury concerns as well. You know, DeAndre Hunter's out for the season. Cam Reddish hasn't even played. And so, you know, the Hawks are sort of at that point where it's like, can they keep this hot streak going? Did they maybe get a little bit lucky against the Sixers as far as that chemistry in Philadelphia wasn't all that good? But then the Bucks, we know about them, their recent history as well hasn't been great. I mean, they got embarrassed in the first 2 games against Brooklyn before coming out and stealing that series. So I think it's fascinating. I think in the East, the Bucks have probably the advantage over the Hawks. Again, home court advantage. Giannis is going to be incredibly difficult to stop. Drew Holiday's an improvement over Eric Bledsoe. Chris Middleton, he comes and goes a little bit, but when he's good, he's really good. So I think that it probably tilts towards Milwaukee in the East. And I think in the West, the Suns, certainly are the team that deserve to be favored in that series. And then if they have home court advantage and they're healthy and Chris Paul's back, I would certainly give Phoenix the advantage right now. I would say it'll be a tight series if it is against the Bucks, but you know, why would you not believe in Phoenix right now from what you're seeing? Because I've been one of those ones thinking that at some point that experience or inexperience are going to catch up with them. And just perhaps, you know, Devin Booker, it's almost too good to be true how he's just continuing to get better and not showing any signs of being a playoff debut rookie. Instead, he's going out there like he's a vet and he's been around for a while. So I certainly, if I was to put rank the four, I would probably say, you know, Phoenix, Milwaukee, Atlanta and LA right now, I would say as the favorites to win it. So maybe we'll get a Hawks and Sun series, Espo. We'll try to get out there and have a game out there and have some fun in Phoenix.
Yeah, if it talks Suns, you and I will definitely be talking and hopefully meeting up with that. Look, uncharted territory in Phoenix. It is rare that we're the favorites in much of anything. So we'll see how all this plays out. He is Lee Ellis. You can listen to him and watch him on the Athletics No Dunk podcast. One of my favorites to listen to. Lee, thank you so much for your time
today. Anytime, Espo. Thanks for having me.
Hey, welcome back into the Brad Sessmatt Show here on Sports 360 AZ. I'm filling in for Brad Sessmatt. I'm Greg Esposito. Espo, as they like to call me. Thanks for being along for the ride today. One segment left here in the books. And while the Phoenix Suns have been the talk of the town, it's been what everybody's been focused on, and rightfully so. Look, this is, as we talked about at the open, something special is going on here in Phoenix. But there's a few other teams in this town that should probably send a thank you basket, a Derek Jeter type gift basket to the Phoenix Suns for taking all the attention, taking the spotlight, if you will, right now in a time where usually it's focused elsewhere. And if it was, it would not be pretty, right? There's still some issues here in Phoenix. It's like when you go to sell a house and you repaint, you move things around, maybe you change the carpet to hide some of those imperfections, right? Because this is a lived in home in Phoenix sports, in Arizona sports. And the Suns are covering up a lot right now. You look at ASU and what's going on there in the men's football program, right? It is interesting how little I actually think, at least locally, this story has gotten play. Allegations of improper recruiting during the pandemic, which is, you know, I get it. The NCAA, there is people trying to get an advantage however they can. Things that happen that are questionable at best, that get brushed under the rug. You know, oh, okay, that's how a recruit gets here. That's how business is done, is what we hear. But during a pandemic, breaking the rules that are implemented to keep not only the kids safe, but the coaching staff safe, everybody safe during a global pandemic in a program that faced so much of COVID-19 in this last year. In 2020, their season, as short as it was going to be, was decimated, even shorter than it was supposed to be due to the pandemic. Head coach Herm Edwards had COVID, and yet somehow they ignore the protocols that are put in place to try, allegedly ignore them, to try to gain an edge in recruiting. It amazes me that, yeah, it's gotten some attention, but in a normal year where the Suns wouldn't likely be playing now, just because of the factor of the NBA schedule normally, this would be the biggest topic in Arizona sports. This would be all over constantly. It would have been full days dedicated to talking about this, and instead, it's story 1C. Maybe, you know, it's the back burner when you've got national outlets like The Athletic looking into it and going, we can't figure out who the leak is that provided this dossier. You gotta love when they use words like that in a scandal. A dossier that somebody, it's a folder, a computer file full of images and receipts, allegedly, but there's so many people that could have been the leak for this, because there's so many people unhappy with Herm Edwards and the program, former coaches, people within that used to be within the inside. That says something. That seems a bit problematic, right? But the Phoenix Suns have diverted attention there, you know. And that's not even the biggest thing. The biggest group that should be thanking the Phoenix Suns this summer is the Arizona Diamondbacks, right? A team that, you know, there weren't huge expectations this year. Let's not lie. But nobody thought they'd be historically bad. Nobody thought they'd lose 23 straight road games. Nobody thought they'd go from being 500 to being 25 games back, by June. There is something systemically wrong going on over there. They can't score runs. Then they can score runs, but they can't pitch. It was a roster that wasn't great to begin with, had lots of holes. It didn't take a baseball expert to look at that group and go, this isn't a team that's going to be fighting the Dodgers for a pennant, right? Or San Diego, or even probably San Francisco. It was pretty obvious they were likely going to be towards the back end of the West. But when you look at just how bad, and I get it, injuries have played a big part in it, right? I understand that. But when you lose 23 straight road games, when you haven't won a road game in what amounts to 2 months, when you've struggled at home even, usually this is where they're calling for somebody's head. This is usually where a Torrey Lovello seat's so hot that it reminds you of a belt, a buckle in your car in the summer, in that July heat when you accidentally touch the metal. That's how hot Torrey Lovello's seat would usually be. Mike Hazen, and I get it, he's going through personal things that I would not wish upon anyone. No one with what his wife is going through, and being the husband of a cancer survivor, my heart goes out to him. But usually this is where they start questioning the guy making the decisions, the GM, But I feel like there's so much attention being paid to the Suns that nobody's really harping on that, right? Cardinals, holes in the roster still. I still think the secondary is a big problem going into training camp. Now, you'll hear people that are saying, no, the secondary is much improved. Byron Murphy's going to be great. We've done enough. Malcolm Butler's going to come in and be what Patrick Peterson couldn't be the last few years. Addition by subtraction with Patrick Peterson gone. But you're playing in a division that now has, you've got great quarterbacks like Russell Wilson still up in Seattle. You look at it, and Matthew Stafford now is in your zip code with the Rams. The 49ers have Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance. Like, there's talent there at the quarterback position. Your defensive backfield is going to be the most important thing on the field this year, because if not, you're going to put Kyler Murray in a position where he has to outscore every offense in a shootout every week. You won't make it easy on Kyler Murray in that offense. And yes, that's supposed to be high octane, and it's supposed to be improved. But that doesn't mean you should put him in a situation where you're in a shootout every week, right? Nobody's talking about it, really, because all the focus is on the Suns. There's some teams that are very lucky right now that the Phoenix Suns are going on a magical run, because it's hiding a lot of the warts that are going on in Phoenix sports. And I don't mean to bring things down, right? Because we are in a celebratory mode watching this Suns team, but that doesn't mean we ignore what's going on in the corner, right? That's when you have problems. That's problematic when you ignore things going on the side. There's some teams in this town that owe this Phoenix Suns one heck of a gift basket. Well, that is the Brad Sasmatch show for a Monday here on Sports 360 AZ. I really appreciate you guys letting me sit here and spending the hour with me. It is a true pleasure to do that. And I always love when the big guy calls me up and says, hey, come sit in my seat, metaphorically right now. We're not in the studio, but I love when he says, come in and sit in the seat. Have a little fun. Share your perspective on what's going on. And Brad, thanks so much. Happy belated Father's Day to you and all the fathers out there. Thank you to Lee Ellis of the Athletics No Dunk podcast for joining me to have a little chat about the NBA. If you want to follow me, you can follow me right here at Espo on Twitter. And if you want to check out what I do on a weekly basis, head over to wherever you get podcasts or search in YouTube for the Solar Panel, a Suns show. You'll find us there. So for Brad Sasmatch, I'm Greg Esposito. We'll talk to you next time here on the Brad Sasmatch Show on Sports 360 AZ.